The PBOC dumps liquidity into the banking system as China's Evergrande situation gets worse. Are rising shipping costs an indication that inflation is here to stay? And with retail sales rising in July, does this mean the American consumer is back? All that and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today because we continue the story with China's Evergrande because it just doesn't seem to get any better. And what I want you to be thinking of, some key points of why this can spiral out of control. Now, we don't know for sure because we don't know at what point China is going to say we've had enough and they're going to try to mitigate the problem, but we're already seeing signs today that the PBOC is stepping in to try to contain this problem before it gets worse. The question is, will it actually have any effect? So here's what I want you to be thinking about, because what are investors going to react to the situation? Are they going to buy more Evergrande stock, or are they going to pull their money out? Are they going to want to buy their bonds or pull their money out? Well, they can't do either today because Evergrande suspended trading on their bonds today on Friday. What about banks that are holding this risk? Will they want to lend more, or will they want to rein in credit? Are they going to have to post more collateral as Evergrande's bonds get downgraded? And what about consumer demand for Evergrande's products? Well, who's going to want to buy a house or put an offer in to buy a property from a company who's struggling, and maybe that property's not being done built yet, or maybe there's not going to be any much of a warranty on it? So let's get into the situation. Let's head over to Bloomberg, who headlines that China's nightmare Evergrande scenario is an uncontrolled crash, and there's concern mounting over the developer's fate as Beijing faces pressure. Again, this is the same story as always. Well, we expanded credit too much. Well, we'll just let the government come in and bail us out. Because this is, again, you know, something I want you to understand is when you have a debt-based economy and they loosen the credit spigots and you put a lot of credit out, you get a lot of expansion. And when you try to rein that credit in, well, all of a sudden you find out that there's a lot of speculation, a lot of rot. And then what is the risk that investors see? Well, if there's rot in this company, or is there rot in all these other companies? And at what point does the government say, you know what, I can't risk a crash, so I'll let the bubble get bigger until it eventually pops? Or do they let it pop? Because everyone wants to try to slowly deflate it. This is what China's trying to do. So far, not too successful. Protests intensify at China's Evergrande Group offices around the country as the developer falls further behind on promises to more than 70,000 investors, construction of unfinished properties. So again, you see unfinished properties. What does that mean? Well, contractors are probably starting to think that they're not going to get paid with enough floor space to cover 3/4 of Manhattan grinds to a halt. And that is a substantial amount of real estate, leaving more than 1 million home buyers in limbo. Can you imagine that you put money down on a property from Evergrande and now you're wondering, is it ever going to get finished? Are you ever going to move in there? Because what's going to happen to your deposit? Poof, it's going to be gone. And that is why you're seeing people storming their office. Buyer sales pummel an already shaky real estate market, squeezing other developers and ripping through a supply chain that accounts for more than a quarter of Chinese economic output. So now you see the real issue. It's a quarter of China's economic output, and everyone is now starting to think, hey, if this is happening to Evergrande, and maybe I don't work for them, or maybe I don't have property from them, is that going to ripple over into other companies? So COVID-weary consumers retrench even further and risk the popular discontent rises during a politically sensitive transition period for President Xi Jinping. Let's continue on with what Bloomberg had to say. While it's impossible to know for sure what would happen if Beijing allows Evergrande's downward spiral to continue unabated, but many people just don't think this is going to happen. So China watchers are gaming out worst-case scenarios as they contemplate how much pain, there's a key point, how much pain the Communist Party is willing to tolerate. Pressure to intervene is growing as China's financial contagion increases. So there's the issues. How far does this thing get out of control? Does the rot spill over into other developers and into other parts of the economy and lead to something even worse instead of just saying, hey, let's just bail them out? As a systematically important developer, now there's some terms we don't see in the U.S. We hear about G-SIBs, global systematic important banks, but we don't hear about a systematically important developer. An Evergrande bankruptcy would cause problems for the entire property sector, said Chen Meng, director of Chanson & Company, a Beijing-based boutique investment bank. Debt recovery efforts by creditors would lead to fire sales of assets, which would drive real estate prices down and hit housing prices. Profit margins across the supply chain would be squeezed. It would also lead to panic selling in capital markets. And here you can already see from this chart from Bloomberg, the shareholder wipeout. Evergrande stock is down 90% from its 2020 high as investors are fleeing. Of course, if the stock continues to go down, that poses massive problems. And look at the junk bond space. And you can see this in China, the yields are their highest level since March of 2020. Now, remember, yields trade inverse bond prices. So if yields are going up, what does that mean for bond prices? Yeah, they're going down as people are saying, I don't want to take any more risk. Now, let's head over to the Wall Street Journal, who says, hey, this is leading to a sell-off in China's property. No surprise, we just saw that from Bloomberg. But let's go on and see what we've got here. That some investors worry that Beijing's deleveraging. Again, this is being led by Beijing. They're the ones that want to cool off their property market. Will mean more developers will run into trouble, and this could also drag down their associated property management companies. Oh, hey, there's your contagion risk. Is now it's just not going to be the developers, but their property management companies potentially as well. And the fact that Beijing has so far refrained from offering help to Evergrande has exacerbated the anxiety, he added, although he said Chinese authorities were unlikely to allow a disorderly unwinding of real estate debt. So, of course, everyone still thinks that Beijing steps in and does something, but what are they going to do? All Evergrande has done is hired some financial advisors to do a debt restructuring, which means those who are owed money aren't going to get exactly what they think when they're supposed to get it. And now we head over to Zero Hedge, which says, hey, look, China injects the most liquidity since February to stem an Evergrande panic. And what does that mean? They injected the most cash into their banking system. Here we see the chart. So through their reverse repurchase agreements, China is putting money into the banking system. And why would they do that? To keep people from panicking, to keep the grease of the wheels of the banking system there flowing. You got to keep the wheels spinning, and perhaps to put some pressure on the banks to still lend or to keep loans from defaulting, because again, that is a risk. You have this massive credit expansion, you try to rein it in, and then you find out that there's a lot of speculation, which then leads to missed payments, which eventually leads to defaults, and then that hits your banking system, and then things blow up. So now let's transition on back to the US as we talk about now. Are we about to see sticky inflation due to rising shipping costs? Now, as we get into this, I want to set this up for you, which is real important, is we have to talk about the unemployment data this week, and then we'll see what is the likely effect of the shipping industry, which has seen massive price increases. Let's first start out with unemployment claims, which went up. Now remember, this number has been trending down, and the estimates were that this was continue lower, and it popped up to 332,000. Now remember, I want you to keep in mind that in a normal, healthy, functioning economy, this number should be right around 200,000. And with a huge number of people on unemployment, we should expect this number to be substantially low, because what are we hearing from employers? Can't find workers, can't find the right skill workers, can't find, got lots of job openings. So I want you to be thinking from a broad macro perspective is, why are we seeing layoffs that are more than 50% higher than normal? That is the question. Why are we seeing that? Because we look down to the rest of the data. Now, I thought this would wash off this week, but I suppose it will be next week. We see the pandemic unemployment assistance and emergency claims go away, and those went up. Now, can you imagine, the benefits ended on the 6th, on Monday the 6th, and what did we see in the data? The claims went up 178,000 or 79,000 to back over 12 million. We shouldn't be seeing that. I mean, again, you see, 10 or 11 million job openings, people know their benefits are expiring, which means for 7.5 million people, their income is going to zero. And that's kind of the setup I want you to be thinking about as we get into the shipping price story. But now this question is, what will states do? Well, we head over to Yahoo Money, and it says no state extends unemployment benefits despite calls from Biden. Well, this is interesting because they don't have the money. Some governors have cited the cost being too high to manage. And while other state officials say no federal funds are left to extend the program, and that is the key, is it should be noted here that no state is extending this benefit beyond September 4th. And that is important. Meanwhile, you have states like California, where I'm at. And what did we do with the money that we could have used to extend unemployment benefits? Well, we used it to give everybody a check called fiscal stimulus, and now we don't have any. So even better, we gave money to people who were still working when we knew for a fact there were people that were going to not have jobs right away, when we could have hung on to that and give it to them. So the setup now, I want you to understand, is we have a lot of people coming off on unemployment claims, so they're gonna have less money. 7.5 million are gonna have none. And with these rising claims still, or elevated claims, we're still seeing problems in the labor market. So now let's head over to the Wall Street Journal, who says rising shipping costs are companies' latest inflation riddle, and this is affecting everything and everyone that's coming in. Transportation costs are typically a fraction of a finished product's price, so they're negligible, and they're emerging as another supply chain hurdle overwhelming some companies already paying more for raw materials and labor. So this now sets up the fact is, are we likely to see sticky inflation here? Because you can see from this chart, weekly spot price to ship a 40-foot container from China to the West Coast in the U.S. is shooting higher. And here's a quote from Wade, the chief executive officer, I'm guessing from Joanne Stores. Sometimes ocean freight now is actually more expensive than the cost of the product. And while their company hasn't raised prices, they're hoping the extra supply chain expenses are temporary. But they don't know. Is that 6 months? 12 months, 24 months, they don't know. And that is a real issue because the cost of transportation goods is a component in every step of a company's supply chain, from the raw materials, your iron ore, steel parts, and the finished product has to move as raw materials are processed in global manufacturing. So the cost of global shipping containers across the ocean is higher, truck drivers in short supply, and gasoline is more expensive. And what do we start to believe now? Is it possible that this inflation could be sticky? Well, let's take a look at what's going on at the Port of Los Angeles and Port of Long Beach, because a lot of people don't believe this is true, but as of Thursday, there's 65 container ships stuck off, waiting off California's coast. And what is the belief here? You know, I mentioned this on Twitter the other day, and the belief was, this is a bunch of future revenues, future profits. This is money coming in. This is because there's an incredible demand for products that consumers are going to keep spending. Now, why did I want to set up the unemployment situation? Because if there's less money and people have less money, how are they going to spend more? But the belief right now is that spending is going to be maintained. And my view is we're importing disinflation, perhaps deflation, because these ships are coming from where? Not other parts of the United States. They're coming from overseas. These are low-cost producers. The question is, even though shipping costs are higher, are they still able to be low-cost producers? Well, what did we talk about on Wednesday? The U.S. Import Price Index, and what did it do? It posted a negative number, was forecasted to be positive 0.3, came in at negative 0.3, and what does that mean? Is we imported deflation. And now you see these ships are just anchoring deflation off the California coast. So let's talk about this notion that there's going to be a continued demand in sales, because what are people pointing to? They're telling me, Steve, you got to understand the inventory to sales ratio is telling you there's massive inflation. There's just so much demand by consumers and so little products on shelves that you don't get it because you never go to the store anymore. You don't understand that retailers, wholesalers, manufacturers, they're just going to drive their prices up because there's no competition. All right, great. Let's take a look at that, because that data, well, it came out this week too. And here we see, there you go, the inventory to sales ratio went down. But here's what I want to point out. The sales, the combined value of sales from trade sales and manufacturer shipments for July was estimated at $1.652 trillion. and that was up. So sales were up, which is good. But here's inventories, because there's two components to this thing you do by dividing sales by the amount of inventories, is that manufacturers and trade inventories for July, they were up 0.5%. So they were up equal, same 0.5%, but they were up and now are sitting at $2.069 trillion. So the inventories are larger than sales. And so, of course, I pulled the Fred chart for you. The inventories to sales ratio on the left in blue. And so here you see it, very low levels. So this is the argument for inflation. And then I put the consumer price index for you. So you can see, and they look a little bit, makes sense, right? Inventory sales ratio is going down, consumer prices go up. So this has got to be it, right? This is the answer, is inventory sales ratio has got to go up. This has got to be inflationary, but is it? Well, I inverted the inventory to sales ratio so you could see it. And now you see the relationship here. And are we potentially seeing a peak in the inventory to sales ratio? That really is a question, because where's inventory? It's sitting off the California coast, ready to come in, and at a time when what is happening? States have run out of unemployment benefits to keep extending these, so they're back to their normal claims at their normal intervals. The stimulus money is gone. The question is, if you build it, if you ship it, if you put it on the shelf, will people indeed buy it? All right, let's take a look at retail sales, because, well, there's a question, is the U.S. consumer back? And what do we see? Retail sales went up 0.7 month over month on a seasonally adjusted basis. Now, before you get too excited about that, because we almost had a 4 consecutive month over month print of negative retail sales, the non-seasonally adjusted number was minus 0.7%. And it's extremely rare that you have a minus non-seasonally adjusted and a positive seasonally adjusted number. It's usually you get a positive seasonally adjusted and a positive non-seasonally adjusted. It's very rare. So it kind of suggests that we had to seasonally adjust things to make them look better. But let's see where consumers are spending their money, because, you know, the issue here is, are these going to affect consumers' ability to go and buy all the stuff that's coming in on the ships, right? That is a question. And so what are we seeing that of this number? So motor vehicle and parts down, electronics down, building material up a little bit, food and beverage, so that makes sense. We know there's food price inflation at grocery stores, so that makes sense. Clothing, now you'd think with schools reopening, this number would have gone up. That was my guess, it didn't. Sporting goods down. General merchandise stores, that's up 3.5%, and miscellaneous, which they can't account for, and non-store retailers up 5.3%. So the question is this going to stick? Because one thing that I want to suggest to you is, when you have things like rising energy costs, rising food costs, rising shelter costs, what does that mean for consumers that we've been talking about this week that are getting pinched and now we're going to have less income? Well, that means they have less money to spend, and that's how inventories can go up. Let's continue on this story, because what do we see with advanced retail sales as they roll over and head lower in blue? Well, it tends to mean that consumer prices also head lower. Now, why does that make sense? Because when people spend less money, retailers do not continue to raise prices. They usually discount them. You know, we've all seen that. We've all bought something on sale. And so let's take a look at the consumer sentiment data that came out today. The University of Michigan, consumer sentiment down, economic conditions, current conditions, ticking up slightly from its preliminary. And then you have expectations. Future expectations are at their pandemic lows. Current conditions at their pandemic lows, and overall sentiment coming down to their pandemic lows. So what I want you to think about here is the consumer is 70% of the economy. So when they are less confident, when you are less confident about your finances or the current situation, do you spend more or do you spend less? That's what I want you to think about. So let's look at this next slide, because what do we have here? University of Michigan buying conditions for homes in blue, vehicles in red, and large durable goods, think washers, dryers, fridges in orange or gold, and they're tanking and they are headed lower. And what is in the report that people cited as a reason for this? High prices. And so what happens when we overlay advanced retail sales with the University of Michigan data is when consumers become less confident, well, that tends to mean retail sales on a year-over-year basis go down. And we see more sensitivity to that now than ever. And without all the stimulus to drive sales, well, where is it likely to go? Lower. And we see this is not updated. The Fred database did not have this updated yet. So we know consumer confidence is down here in the low 70s, suggesting that there's going to be less spending. And that is really the key that I want to make, is the consumer is already telling us at a point when there's tons of inventory coming in and people are going to have less money. Let's take a look at a quick look at the Philly Fed data that came in. And here's another story. This manufacturing issue is we see the Philly Fed said the diffusion index went up. So that would give you an idea that the manufacturing sector is expanding. But let's look at the details. New orders, fewer firms reported new orders. Shipments, are more firms reported they're getting shipments out. That's good news. Unfilled orders, fewer firms saying that they have unfilled orders. Delivery times, they're coming down. So fewer firms are saying that that's an issue. Inventories went from negative. Hey, inventories from negative to positive. Oh, wait a minute. I thought we were going to have a sales bonanza here. Prices paid. Fewer firms saying that the prices are rising. So that is, you know, suggesting disinflationary pressures coming. Prices received, same number of firms reported price increases or prices received as before. Number of employees, fewer firms reporting an increase in employment. And but the average work week is rising. Last but not least, let's talk about what's going on in the tick data. Remember, in July, the Fed issued a statement regarding the standing repurchase agreements. I said this was bullish for treasuries. A lot of people said no. But how about this? Major foreign holders of treasury securities in July went from 7.5 trillion, from 7.497 trillion to 7.543 trillion. And how about foreign officials? Their number increased from 4.239 trillion to 4.278 trillion, pretty much validating that there is indeed demand for treasuries. And despite the recent selling, which is why we're back at the wall, playing a little defense, there is a demand for it. And the market is just believing in this inflation story. But I think in the coming weeks and coming months, we're going to see that number roll over unless the shipping costs keep it up. That'll be interesting to watch. Anyways, thanks for being fans. Thanks for supporting the show. We'll see you on Sunday if you watch the chart show. If not, we'll be back on Monday, of course, for our regular show. I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or advice. Materials not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell any security, financial instrument, or participate in a particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Finance, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.